Chris is, I consider him a brother, and complete trust on stage. There are very few people that you feel that you can count on no matter what, and that listen so intensely and can react, have the ability to react and respond in that way, where it's always a revelation. It's always somehow transcends the moment to play together.
And I think it's a testament to our mutual admiration, but also our mutual all-encompassing passions of all kinds of music, that every project that we've done has had to spill over into a double CD set.
I really, really, really want to talk to you specifically about the Pussy Riot cover on this album. First off, I would love to hear about when you first came across the song, Punk Prayer, when you heard it and what it was like to experience that song.
Well, of course, we had heard of their story and followed that in the news. You know, I told Chris, I think we should arrange something of theirs. And I didn't know what that meant exactly. I started listening to their music, and it was very difficult for me to find
a lot
anything.
A lot of screaming and thrashing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't sure how we would translate that to cello and piano. When I did come across, in fact, we dropped the idea for a couple of weeks. And then I did come across the Punk Prayer and this very beautiful Russian Orthodox hymn that it's based on. And that, I thought, okay, we can do something with this. This was pretty effortless to translate to what we do, except that it requires some tools.
The Russian Orthodox hymn was really a good foot in the door. I mean, at least there was some musical content in itself, you know, straddling genres. We were able to, you know, begin with. It wasn't until much later, even after we recorded it, that we realized, thanks to Garry Kasparov's excellent book, Winter is Coming, about Putin's Russia, we realized that Punk Prayer was indeed the song that landed Pussy Riot in jail. So it became rather a cause célèbre to do this piece.
And so I would love to just ask a little bit more. You've got this idea that you're exploring the Slavic soul. So I'd love to hear in your own words, what is the Slavic soul?
Actually, Katie, you're only the second person in the world who's actually asked us to define, you know, our very ostentatious definition of the Russian soul, the Slavic soul.
There's a kind of romanticism and imagination, and, you know, full of a history and literature and art and a culture that you know, defines defines the Slavic soul. And I mean, these composers are, I mean, Shostakovich, Prokofiev, and Rachmaninoff, the three composers we've chosen as sort of the foundation of this album, are really, you know, some of the most inspired melodic writing and just treatment of the cello and piano together in our history. So it's,
I do think that there is a certain isolationism, strictly born of climate, I think. You know, I mean, it's a, you know, the frozen tundra of much of Russia was instrumental in its burgeoning art, religion, literature. I remember reading Richard Taruskin's book, Defining Russia Musically, which is an excellent book, but he wrote a huge chapter about the influence of Italian opera on Russia, and because it was incredibly popular back in the day, and Tchaikovsky and the rest had to really react as far as how much they were going to defend the Russian ethos and how much they were going to incorporate these wonderful machinations and colors of this art form that was proving to be, you know, taking over the world. What's, I think, more important in terms of this project in the environment of our other projects, which have previously straddled genres, we're doing that again here, but at the same time, I think we are more importantly straddling the idea of three separate generations of Russian music in exile and in protest. And so I think that speaks to virtually every piece of music on the program.